School districts across the state are getting more clarity this morning on when and how they'll reopen in the fall. We're talking about the newly published guidelines on the state capitol report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, guidelines are intended to provide direction to school officials about best practices for opening schools. Traditional classroom instruction has been on hold since March due to the pandemic. So what do you hope schools consider in their planning for fall? What are your biggest concerns? We're at 800-642-1234. Mike Thompson is Deputy State Superintendent of the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, and he served in this position for the past decade. Mike, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, the 87-page report is out this morning. We'll go deeper into the plan, but first, can you give us some takeaways, some overview?
Well, I think general overview is what we all expect and hope schools, buildings will open this fall. That's our expectation. Things will undoubtedly look different. And this guide that we put out really is a guide to help assist school districts in that decision-making as they build educational services and supports in this COVID virus. It is a collaborative approach between the education side of our society and the public health side as they converge around this pandemic. And going into this guide, we worked closely with the State Department of Public Health, regional public health entities, and a lot of educational stakeholders in putting the guide together.
What is the timing on this guidance? Why release the guidance right now?
Well, because districts are planning for the fall and they're looking for some guidance around what they have to consider in that planning environment. So we're still 2.5 months away from the start of the next school year. That time will go relatively fast. School districts are good planners, but they're planning for something they really, quite frankly, have never had to plan before in this detail. So the sooner we can get guidance out, the sooner we can assist them along that path, the better off for them.
And with a really shifting environment, COVID-19 changes day to day for many different parts of Wisconsin. So how do you negotiate that when the pandemic is changing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so districts have to plan for several different scenarios. And if there's one thing we've learned over the last several months is things change and that change is unpredictable. So there are some assumptions around the virus. We know that we're all hoping for a vaccine, likely won't be in broad use for some time, maybe 12 to 8 months. We know that we're learning more about the virus. So how we precisions and steps and protocols we have to take shift and change over time. And so this guide that we're putting out, we consider it a fluid document. This will be updated as protocols change, maybe become less restrictive or more restrictive as the conditions play out. So it is going to be a fluid document, and school districts have to work with that fluidity in planning for the fall.
So will schools choose to have students in school 5 days a week, 4 days a week? What are the models that you are offering here?
Yeah, there's several different models that school districts will be looking at. And we'd all hope, I think, that we reconvene in-person learning for all kids. Districts will plan for that and that might not be the case for all kids based on the conditions that they have to try to meet around the health and safety of kids. And that's the priority. How do we make sure when we bring kids back to school, it's into a safe environment and it is cognizant of this pandemic that we're in. So they'll plan for in-person learning for students. They'll plan for what we kind of call physically distance learning, where maybe some kids are in for part of the time and then out for part of the time. They're not there every part of the day, or that their structure of how they operate within the school is different. And they'll continue to plan for virtual learning. And so that might be necessary for some kids. There are going to be some kids who won't come back into school, maybe because of health needs or health issues that they have, and you have to plan for a virtual environment for those kids. They also have to plan for an environment that may change during the school year as the pandemic changes. And so if we get a surge in the pandemic and it's a public health decision to close schools, they're going to have to go back to that virtual environment. So they have to be prepared for all those different scenarios going into the fall.
We're discussing the state's new guidance for schools on reopening this fall with Deputy State Superintendent Mike Thompson. Taking your questions, 800-642-1234. Mike, as part of this plan, there would be screening of students and staff. How would that work for screening for COVID-19?
Yeah, there's a couple different ways that may work for screening. And so if I can put this in place around addressing this virus, if you look at it into three big buckets, coming back into school, districts are going to have to put in place some social distancing parameters. That's a big bucket that there's a lot in the context of their school determine how they do that. The same with ensuring that staff and children that come to school are healthy and are not, you know, they're not at risk for having the COVID virus coming into that particular environment. And that's where you talk about screening coming in. There's various ways to do that based on context. No staff member or child's coming to that building if they have a temperature of over 100.4. How do we get that? Well, that can be done in various different ways. Some schools are considering providing temperature checks on kids. For some schools, that's not a practicable approach for them because of the numbers that they have. They'll rely on family members. There's going to be a lot of communication at home that students would take their temperature to make sure that that people coming into the building are as healthy as possible, and we collectively make sure that people don't come into the building that are not feeling well. And so there's going to be, based on context of the school, there's going to be various ways they do that. And one of the ways is a check on temperature and a screening on temperature. That could be done in the school or that could be done at home. So that's a critical piece of all of this, that and not just the kids but the staff as well.
Let's take a call now. Jane is joining us from Madison. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I work in a public school. I'm a special ed aide. And understanding that you'll have a lot of protocols in place for keeping, unhealthy people out of school. But I also have been told a lot of times that you can feel healthy, you can not have a temperature and actually be shedding this virus. And I don't understand. No, it's not that I don't understand. I don't see a way to do many of the jobs in a school with certain, populations of kids in the special ed department, in the very young category, without physical contact. And so I'm wondering about, I'm not saying that I want PPEs to go back to school and to be, behind plastic to my students, but I'm just wondering if that's in there and if that's being talked about. And, for the kids who cognitively are not going to be able to understand, we can't get closer than 6 feet. What do we do?
Yep. That's a great question, Jane, and it is all around mitigating the risk. How do we reduce the risk as much as possible? And that's what you see going on in our society all over the place. How do we reduce the possibility of risk? And so, yes, they're screening about kids coming into the building, but once kids are in the building, and as you said, many people in this virus are asymptomatic, that's why we put these other pieces in place and around social distancing and all the various ways to social distance. It's very much more difficult with certain populations, as you mentioned, Jane, which you're absolutely right. It's around using personal protection equipment where it's feasible, and the use of masks by students where it's feasible, and depending on their grade level and their ability to do that. So this guide does lay out several ways that people can operate their school building in a way that tries to maximize those factors, such as social distancing, such as wearing masks, such as setting up an environment that kids can be as safe as possible from plexiglass in the cafeteria and all those different things, and how you at the best way possible, reduce the risk of this disease spreading in this environment.
We have Deputy State Superintendent Mike Thompson with us as the State Department of Public Instruction has released guidance for schools. We'll be back in a minute. StateCap continues here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The DPI, Department of Public Instruction, is out with guidelines this morning on how schools will approach learning this fall. What precautions do you want to see in classrooms this fall to keep students and staff safe? Should classes be smaller? Should masks be mandatory? Should certain activities be prohibited? We're at 800-642-1234. DPI's Deputy State Superintendent Mike Thompson stays with us. So, Mike, going along there with Jane being a special ed aide, let's look at the social distancing for a moment, because part of the plan is, separating out groups of students, such as special ed students, such as English learners, to make smaller classes. What would that look like?
Yeah, that's another good question. It could take on various forms. It could look various different ways. But the idea is, to the best of their ability, that they're able to provide smaller groups of children in one place together. And if they do have small groups of children together, those children stay together through the day, so there's not a greater mix across. It doesn't mean it simply means that some of those strategies around social distancing, you'll see evident in that school building, from the instructional design to how they pass in the hallway, how they interact with their teachers. You may have a small group of students in a classroom meet with their classroom teacher and then move on to another teacher because they stay in smaller groups, and that classroom teacher teaches another group of kids. So this guide lays out various ways that could happen to the best of their ability, kind of mitigate these measures. And physical distancing is one of the measures they're going to do to the extent that's practicable. We all know that school buildings across the state vary in their size, vary in their space capacity. And so districts are considering models where they maximize their space so they have the ability to move kids away from each other to the best of their ability. And I wanted to stress that these are guidelines and not requirements on school districts. And these are guidelines that school districts will work closely with their local public health agency in implementing, because the context of their buildings is really important on how deep into some of these guidelines they can go, how practicable some of these guidelines are for them. And it's not just, it's the social distancing, it's the isolating of those with an illness and making sure people are screened coming in. It's all the good hygiene practices that we've all learned over the last couple of months of constantly washing your hands and how do you do etiquette and coughing and sneezing. Those will be stressed. Those will be signs of those all over the place as we go forward, and including how do you disinfect and clean, how do you do those protocols in a school building during a pandemic. Those will all likely be different in schools. All those combined will help reduce the risk for kids and staff in that building.
We're talking about the state's new guidance for schools on reopening with Deputy State Superintendent Mike Thompson. And your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in John now, joining us from Washburn. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a school bus driver, and I'm just wondering what's the plan for school buses?
Yeah. Morning, John. I know you're up early because you're a school bus driver, but we do have specific guidance around transportation. It is one of the logistical issues that school districts are really trying to figure out, and the context of this is different across the state from school buses that have 45 kids on to much less than that. There will be efforts to try to the recommendation will try to minimize the number of kids and social distancing on a bus. There will be measures to ensure kids are wear masks on buses and other personal protection equipment, possibly, but masks on buses. There will be strategies where kids that come on a bus, if they must sit together, they're sitting with family members and they're not intermixing with other students. There are recommendations here on the there's a specific piece in here, John, on transportation around how to keep the bus drivers safe, how to possibly put up plexiglass between the bus driver and the students. So there's various measures that are put in place around transportation, but clearly it is one of the logistical issues that districts struggle with most of how to get kids to school in a safe way through transportation. And many districts are considering asking more parents to transport their kids to school if they can, but still the need to transport kids on a bus is a necessity, and it's an important consideration as they try to mitigate the risk factors for kids. And they're going to have to put strategies in place to do that.
And by the way, we have a link to the Education Forward Plan, as it's called. It's at wpr.org/mornings. John, thank you for your call. Mike, let's look at face masks specifically. What is the guidance there from DPI on when and how, what age groups would wear them?
Well, we look at the guidance from the Department of Health around that piece. And save face coverings worn by staff and students is going to be encouraged. It's not required. Again, it's their guidance, but to be used as feasible as possible and essential when physical distancing is difficult. That's the issue around face masks. It's a next layer of protection if you can't do the physical distancing that's necessary to spread this virus. Of course, we don't recommend, you know, any school-aged child could be taught to how to use the face mask, but it's going to be with the level of kids. Certainly much more feasible for high school kids and middle school kids than it is for elementary kids around how to keep those masks on and do them safe. But anytime you're going to bring those kids together in an environment where physical distancing is not possible, there's a recommendation that they wear face masks. And there'll be a lot of I don't know if I call it training, but information around the use of face masks as kids return to school and the proper use of those. But it will be recommended when physical distancing is not possible.
This plan will cost school districts money trying to fight the pandemic. Governor Evers announced setting aside $46 million in federal CARES Act funding for K-12 schools. How will this money be used?
The money that the governor set aside will primarily be used for school districts that had the greatest challenges in meeting the alternative virtual environment that we find ourselves find schools found themselves in. Some from around having internet access to having affordable internet to having computer devices that varied across the state, creating great inequities of people that had access to online learning. So that money will be helped to be used to overcome some of those challenges. In addition, that money will be used to make sure that our teachers are well prepared in this online environment, that they have access to really high quality online materials, whether that be in a totally virtual environment or a hybrid environment. So when the delivery of service is different than every single kid coming to school and there's a component of a virtual environment, every single kid in this state ideally has the same access to that environment and the same opportunities to achieve. That's primarily where that money will be used. There will be other costs to school districts, as we've talked about, the wearing of face masks and reducing the number of kids on a bus and all the different safety factors that schools will put in place in their buildings. Those are a cost of school districts, and it is a concern of school districts of how are they going to cover these costs. Well, I can tell you this: when a school district opens, the safety of kids will be their primary objective, and they will. I'm confident that when schools open in the fall, they will be safe places for kids to the best extent possible.
Let's look here at the piece for mental health for just a moment. My twin boys, they just graduated kindergarten, and I overheard them talking as they went to sleep just the other night. And one said to the other, "I'm scared to go back to school. The coronavirus will get me." I'm wondering, how do you approach mental health?
Yeah, that is a huge issue. And I look at it as kind of the social and emotional needs of kids. It's real. And there are kids that like your twins and worried about going to school. Are they going to be safe at school? And all the other things that have impacted kids, like all of us during this environment, they're what's happened at home, and maybe their parents got laid off. So it is a huge, this document lays out several strategies around how do we ensure that the social emotional needs of kids and the mental health needs of kids are met at a time where they are going to be increased. And the fact is when kids go back to school and parents send their kids to school, they need to feel that they're sending their kids in a safe environment, and all kids need to feel that they are in a safe environment. And that'll be one of the communication roles of school districts with parents and with kids, because we know kids can't learn when they're afraid and when they have fear, when they have these social and emotional issues around the environment they're in. And so there's a lot of work to do on that arena, but a lot of it is going to be communication with parents and with kids when they come into that environment so they feel safe.
Mike, we just have a few moments left, but what is the timeline for parents hearing from school districts about what will happen at their schools?
That's going to vary by school districts. I think most school districts have already started planning and have these scenarios in place. Which of these scenarios they actually deploy, I think school districts are waiting a little bit to see the changing nature of the virus and the condition. Like I said earlier, what we know is things have changed and they've changed rapidly. So districts are not waiting to plan, they're planning, but when they're surveying parents and about how many are comfortable sending their kids back. They're gathering all this information, and I think it will be later in July that they will actually articulate what they're actually going to do in the fall.
Mike, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Mike Thompson, Deputy State Superintendent of the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. We have a link to DPI's newly published guidelines. Go to wpr.org/mornings. The State Capitol Report continues after a news update on the Ideas Network.